Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hello, once again, Trailblazer fans. We are here with the Dave and Marlo Show. I'm Dave Deckard with Marlo Ferguson Jr. And I gotta tell you, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, Marlo, but I'm gonna bring down the room right away. I am so sorry, but I can only confess this to you. I can't write it out. I can't tweet it. I'll get killed. Oh, Marlo, I am not convinced. I am not convinced. The Blazers are on a two-game winning streak, and I am not convinced that things are better. Am I crazy? I mean, they had a couple good games this week, but how are you feeling right now?
I don't think you're crazy at all. I'm in a similar spot. You know, I still haven't gotten over that Sunday loss to the Lakers. It's one of those games that just makes you question everything, and I had to take a nap after that game. It was that bad, so I don't think you're crazy for thinking that. I think everybody's kind of in that same boat right now.
Yeah, I mean, at least you only took a nap. I mean, I think a lot of people were taking like straight shots out of the bottle and maybe contemplating the purpose for their life. Let's start there since we started there. I mean, we'll start depressing it and ramp up. But I'm telling you, fans, I love you. I like the team winning, but we'll get there. So the Blazers come out on Sunday night against the Lakers, kind of slow, have a little bit of a dismal first quarter, but then post their biggest margin in franchise history in the second quarter. Something like 45-13 or something obnoxious like that. Absolutely house the Lakers, just destroy them and go into halftime with what, 71 points, something like that. It was, I don't know, it was a lot. And all of a sudden, LeBron comes out in the third quarter and scores quick. And you're going, well, okay, yeah, he's going to make a show of it, but there's no way he can. And then he scores again. And then more stuff happens. And then he's bowling down the lane. And then all the Lakers start scoring. And all of a sudden, Portland just wilts like, you know, a noodle in the sun and cannot stave off the Lakers, who go on to not quite blow them out, but it sure felt like it. What the heck happened there?
I just remember thinking, like, when the Lakers cut the lead to 7 or 8, I'm like, if they don't keep this lead while LeBron is at the scores table, this game is, you could just feel the momentum shifting in that game. And I thought the writing was kind of on the wall with just the shot selection overall. You know, the Blazers were taking those hard fall-away shots, stagnating a little bit, and the Lakers were trading them off with wide-open three-pointers. So it was just, eventually it catches up to you, and that loss is, it's going to be hard to erase. They're going to need a 10-game winning streak for us to kind of not think about that.
Well, and they made Thomas Bryant look like Kobe Bryant, for gosh sakes. Yeah. And, you know, Dennis Schroeder is scoring 24 points on you. And, you know, God bless Dennis. I like his game. It's fine. But, you know, when the Lakers picked him up, it wasn't to score 24 points. Yeah, it was the only thing that almost got in the way of that game for LA was Russell Westbrook, who went old Russ for a minute and like tried to blow it for them. But everything else worked great. So let me ask you this. After that game, Chauncey Billups said the Blazers didn't have playoff experience and in a playoff atmosphere got run out of the building. Or bullied, basically. It's not the first time he said similar things like that. He's talked about their physicality. He's talked about their intensity. He's talked about their consistency. Are you buying what Chauncey is selling here? Is he accurate? And if so, is that a sufficient explanation or does more blame need to be laid in more places?
I think it's more of a half buy, half sell kind of thing. I like what he said about being like the least experienced head coach and whatnot and not really having a ton of repetitions as far as that goes. So that part, I think you can honestly see that. And it tells itself in the stats. You know, they have the most blown double digit leads of any team in NBA this year. So you see it there. But I think that it's also a situation where, you know, the reporters are asking him, like, are the players responding to what you say? And I think it's on a coach and a coaching staff to make sure that they do. And so it's like I said last week, I try to look at it the same way I would look at it as second year player. They're not going to be perfect. They're going to make mistakes, but you know, eventually you don't want to be making the same ones that you were making earlier in the year. So I think he's on his way, but a second year coach going to the NBA finals, I think with this group, I think it's going to be really tough to sell. So I'd be like kind of on the fence with that.
Well, I mean, I think the players are responding to what he says, but what everybody was saying in that second half is holy bleep. You know, it's like, first of all, LeBron uncorked, but it wasn't just that. I mean, he was bullying the Blazers. In fact, the Lakers were bullying the Blazers around the court. I mean, they were not only running them, but they were getting in the lane. They were dunking in the half court. There was a lot going on there. And Portland just took a long time to wake up. It's like they thought they were entitled to that game that they, you know, the script says we win. It's like, this ain't pro wrestling, bro. It's you gotta actually play these games. And I don't know. I think Chauncey was kind of right. I will tell you this. I think Chauncey was right. And that doesn't mean I think he's done the best coaching job. He can be questioned. But in this case, I think he described it accurately. LeBron just out-intensed them. He outplayed them. He buffaloed them out of that win. And the Blazers had no response. That is kind of a playoff atmosphere, like Chauncey said. That's how teams get run out of the playoffs. We've seen this for more than a decade in Portland now. And I don't think it's changed.
It's tough, but I'll take his press conference where he's saying these kind of things as opposed to when he's just saying we got to do better and just the regular cliches that we normally get. So I think it's a step in the right direction. But it's also concerning, you know, if a playoff atmosphere does that to you and you're playing against the Lakers in a battle of the 12 seeds without Anthony Davis, that's concerning. You know what I'm saying? I look at that and it makes you really question if they're going to be able to, what they're going to do against a real, real championship contender. So, it's better to make these mistakes in January, but it's still inexcusable no matter how you slice it.
Well, it's the same thing they always do, I think. I don't even think that means they're doomed in the playoffs. They can probably win a round. They might even win two if they got lucky, but eventually you're going to run into a team that wants to beat you and will do anything to do it. And the Blazers, when they get hit in the nose, they retreat. They don't have a response. And, you know, I'm not saying, look, Damian Lillard has engineered some great comebacks and the Blazers have prospered. I get that. But it's always the same thing. It's like, okay, we get really hot on three-pointers. We get a run going. You know, sometimes we get some dunks and stuff, but that's not really the point of it. It's like we get really torrid flow of offense going here and we catch up and there we go. Now we won. Aren't we great? Hey, you know what? That has almost nothing to do with standing nose to nose with somebody. It has nothing to do, you know, all the other guy has to do is hit you again. And then all of a sudden, all your fancy offense, the Blazers are like that guy in the cartoons who's doing the, you know, why I oughta and making all his moves, right? And then as soon as he gets hit, this fight is over. And I don't know. I don't know if it's personnel. I don't know if it's coaching. I think it's maybe all of the above. I think it's in Portland's culture at this point, too. It's just, this is Blazers basketball. And it's frustrating to see.
I think, yeah, I can definitely agree with that. You know what I'm saying? I too many times we've been up on the Lakers and had it in that way. And I think we're kind of trained to assume that it's going to kind of be rough when you get the big lead like that. And this season just isn't helping. You know, this is what, 10, 11 different double-digit collapses in the second half. So it's rough. It's rough right now.
Yeah.
And I hate that the Damian Lillard and Patrick Beverley stuff kind of tilted over into that, too. You always want to win those games against him because he talks so much noise, but it's rough.
Well, Dame is the one guy, I think, who is veteran enough and talented enough to have a chip on his shoulder and have it matter. But you know what? That's like Terry Porter having that with the, you know, Clyde Drexler Blazers. Okay, that's great. But where's Jerome Kersey? Where's the Buck Williams? You know, the Clyde and Terry, they were offensive players. They learned to be tougher and harder and, you know, more physical. But they also had those forwards backing him up, and you did not mess with them. You go back to Maurice Lucas with the championship Trailblazers, who turned the series by getting into a fight with Daryl Dawkins. You know, it's like, okay, the Blazers have zero of that. They're, sorry about the wrestling analogy, guys, but you hear about guys like, you know, Haku, who was in the WWF. I forget, he was like Meng in WCW. But the legendary stories of, like, you never wanted to get in a real fight with this guy because he would literally claw your eyes out and you would be crawling away on the floor so nobody tested him. The Blazers got none of that. They are pure Jeff Hardy. Like, we're going to jump off a ladder. We're going to make you ooh and ah and applaud. But when it comes right down to it, when stuff gets real, all our flipping and twisting isn't going to end up persevering.
The Jeff Hardy fan of me hates that. Oh, my God. I used to love that guy.
He is awesome. But you know what? Yeah. He's not the guy you're going to pick when stuff gets real, right? Like, hold still, mister. My backup is going to get on top of the bar and do a Hurricane Rana on you. Hold still. Like, no, we're not going to do that. Oh, man. So anyway, that was the Lakers game. I mean, and I will tell you, I was not as depressed after. I was surprised at the reaction of Blazers Nation. People were really down in the dumps. I was kind of sanguine about that. Yeah. So I'm higher on that than most people were. But, okay, it took you 150 points to beat San Antonio, and I get you blew them out. But you know what? That was, like, not a game. That's not a repeatable game. And then it took you 60 from Dame to beat Utah, and I get, again, they had bigger margin than that. But games you win by scoring 150, or Dame has one of the four highest scoring games of his career – not repeatable experiments to me, still not convinced.
It's crazy just the entire week to go from a 25-point loss to the second highest scoring game you've had in 30 years to a 60-point game from Damian Lillard. It's just tough. It's absolutely incredible. But I think in that game, if you look at the Blazers, what they've done in January, four of their five best games in terms of offensive rating have come in this month. So it's good to see that, but you just hope the defense can sort of, you know, get back going too. And for them to be tied at 74 in the first half is the worst defense in the league, too. So
it was a lot. I mean, we're in bizarro. This was the most bizarre week that I can remember in a long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's not gloss over Damian Lillard's greatness, though. I mean, oh, gosh, 60 points, literally the most efficient 60-point game ever posted in league history. Talk to me about Dame, what you saw that night, and just go ahead, rehearse for us, soothe, balm our wounds with what you see from Damian Lillard right now and how it makes you feel.
I think we can all agree that an aggressive Damian Lillard is always the best case scenario. And the thing that I liked about it is that even when he scored a lot of points, you know, he was still making the right plays. You know, they were doubling him. He was bringing guys over it and dishing it to the corners and whatnot. So it's a well-played 60-point game. And he said in his press conference, he thrives in these kind of high-pressure situations. And, you know, you want to just see that translate over to the rest of the guys, too.
Yeah. I mean, he's making cathedrals out here to basketball, basically. This has gone beyond a guy who is supremely talented individually, offensively, obviously. But you see him now, and he's the guy who is watching the terrain, bringing in the construction materials, leveling out the ground, erecting the arches and the buttresses, painting, or, you know, paint them, but, you know, forging the stained glass windows, for gosh sakes. And just, it's a monument. That game was a monument to what basketball is supposed to look like. And I understand that the NBA is in the midst of its biggest offensive boom ever. I understand that plenty of guys are scoring 40, 50, 60, you know, even this year. But still, as you say, the way that game was played was just absolutely astonishing. And you could literally put a plaque by that, stick it by the side of the road on a screen, have people stop their cars, put a sign, you know, here's a historical monument, stop by and watch the tape from this. And it would not be necessarily a wasted trip. That should be somewhere playing on a 24-hour loop for all of our progeny to understand what basketball is supposed to be about.
Man, and it's so easy to take those games for granted, too. When you have 30 at the half, you know, it's just, we've seen it so many times and we're kind of conditioned to just expect it. And so it's just fantastic. And like I said, just the way he played in terms of being unselfish was, it made it even better. I'm saying, because he shared that moment with the other guys, and he could have had some more opportunities to score more points too. So
yeah,
I worry about him doing a little bit too much, but you'll take it when it's a win like that. So,
well, and to be fair, I mean, it's not like he did too much. It feels like he did just right in that game. It was the perfect storm, you know, where the opportunities were there. He took them appropriately and he hit the shots, like all the shots. And it's just like you're going, okay, one of those three things is a good game. Two of them is a great game. All three of them is, wow. It's like pulling the Las Vegas slot machine and, you know, 777 right there. I don't look, we've seen great games. That might not be the best one ever in a Blazers uniform, but for combination of superstar power and basketball purist, that one is close.
I can see that being the case too. And I think if it isn't, it's definitely in the top five, top 10. My mind sort of drifts to that game five against OKC to close out the series, the way he played in that first half and just all the variables that you add into that, it was incredible. But I want to bring up a note to you. We've talked about this a lot. The fast break and transition points. 24 against San Antonio, 26 against Utah. I think you tweeted me about this, but I was asleep during that time, so I missed it. But the Blazers are 7-0 when they crossed that 24 fast break points mark, and I couldn't be happier.
That's what I tweeted. Like, everybody should pay attention to Marlo now, because he's got to be, he's been talking about this forever.
My goodness. It's just great to see. And for Dame Lillard, it makes his offense much easier too, because you can run the double drag screens at the top and really punish teams. You know, they got to bring guys up and opens up shots for everyone. So hopefully that's something that you see continue. The Blazers have had a fantastic month in offensively in January. They're just 5-8. So you want to see it start to move in a more positive direction. So hoping for that.
Yeah, they've got a weird aura going on. Like, their defense is actually decent in December, but the offense then sputtered. And then in the new year, I mean, it carried over a little bit. It wasn't exactly at the calendar turn. But then the offense has all of a sudden started to pick up, but now the defense can't do anything. Now, that makes me suspect, I mean, is this kind of pace related? When the Blazers play faster, does their defense suffer?
I think that's reasonable. I mean, because you got to exert more energy on the defensive end. And I didn't think that it was going to be as bad as it was, because you've got Gary Payton coming back, you got Nasir Little coming back, so you got more freedom to substitute guys in and out. But I think with time, I think you'll see it sort of balance itself out. I think the Blazers are going to kind of cap off at being a average defense. I think if they're 15th or something like that, they'll live with that. Because they've got an offense that can do a lot of things. And like I said, 20-point scorers, different guy every night. So I think you can live with that. And it's a sustainable avenue to get offense from and win games with.
So now, there might be another reason for it. And we would go from the sublime to the ridiculous. All of a sudden, Nurk fever has turned into some kind of stomach flu. Because he has put together a string of games that charitably were not good. Fouls early, effort questionable, foot speed slow. It's not that, I mean, I think he had a good statistical game in there somewhere, maybe a couple.
Yeah.
But it, Drew Eubanks has been shining, mostly because Nurkic has had to sit. That has the potential to impact Portland's defense, wouldn't you say?
I would say so, yeah, because for everything that we can say about Nurkic, you know, he's a serviceable rim protector. And just looking at the numbers right now, he's of his last six games, he's had single-digit scoring in four of those. 25-point game against San Antonio, but after that, it's been mostly crickets. And I sort of wonder if that calf injury that they talked about before is maybe, I don't know. I don't want to speculate on that, but he definitely doesn't seem like the same guy that he was earlier in the year. And I think if there's a faster pace, nobody's going to pay for it as much as he does. So it's going to be tough to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Trying to figure out if the Blazers have left him in the dust, if he's kind of going through one of his Nurk funks, and that's happened repeatedly, or if something else is going on. We can talk more about the something else's a little bit later. Nasir Little, absolutely shining, don't you think?
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of his. Even when his shots don't fall, like he had an air ball shot where he missed it over the rim. But just the confidence level that he has in his shot selection now and the pull-ups, it's big. And I think every single game he puts his imprint on it, whether he gets 10 minutes, whether he gets 20 minutes, that second unit is better with him. He had a huge role in that San Antonio game. They had 47 bench points. I don't remember the Blazers having 47 bench points this year. But having guys like that and the energy he brings is just, you can't say enough about it. So I think that he's going to make guys more expendable, guys in his position. Maybe you can make some trades based on his growth and his elevation this year. But can't say enough about what Nasir Little's done when he's healthy and he's ready to go. And he said that he's back to full strength. So just building upon that.
Yeah, Little is always going to play defense. That's part of his game that we take for granted. And we can just almost presume that. But 4-for-7 versus the Lakers, 4-for-6 shooting versus the Spurs, 3-for-6 versus the Jazz. He's not taking a ton of shots, but he's shooting over 50% from the field, which is just the kind of efficiency that you prize Josh Hart for, right? And Little might also have a little more range. And Little, while I still don't think he's like the 48-minute consistent defender that Hart is, Little is more of a small forward than Hart is, and Little has more explosiveness and opportunistic defense than Hart does. So I think you're right. I think there's a lot of promise there.
I see what you mean there too, because his defense is more explosiveness, more energy based, and that's hard to do for, you know, 30-40 minutes. Kind of reminds me of one of those wind up toys where if you wind it up too much, it runs into the wall and like falls and whatnot. So you gotta just be able to control that energy. Yeah. And so I like what it does in terms of just the subs that he can make. You know, Billups can run the different guys, subbing them in and not keeping them fresh. So I think that's found money. That's an extra benefit that you have. But I agree with you on that Hart's probably a better possession-for-possession defender. But the guy gets hot, stick a little on him, and then maybe stick Gary Payton on him, and you got some options now. So you can never have too many of those.
Yeah. Now, Karen, we mentioned Eubanks. We should really stop on him for a minute. With Nurkic on and off, Drew's come out. He's been mobile. He's blocked shots. He's got that kind of, you know, sticking his chin up and say, I don't care what the name is on the back of this uniform. You better deal with this play right now. And you got my hand in your face, or you just watched the ball sail into the stands. You talk about found money. Drew Eubanks filling in serious minutes for Jusuf Nurkić was not something that was necessarily predicted this season.
It wasn't, but hey, however you got to do it, when you get to January and February, you got to dig in your bag of tricks and get creative. We're seeing that with the Blazers now. And one thing about Eubanks, he's not going to take points off the board. You give him six shots, he's going to get you five, get you four. It's always going to be efficient. And unlike a lot of the energy guys, you see it every single night in the box score. You know, so I think that got to continue to put him out there. You know, so he's not going to hurt you. Defensively, he's not the greatest, but he's going to play with energy, and you can never have too much of that. So I think he's definitely a guy that he's earned his minutes, and he's going to continue to earn his minutes going forward. So,
yeah, 100%. And to complete the bizarre week, Gary Payton played in all three games. What happened? That's actually awesome. And I do look, you know, people thought we were overselling Peyton and Little, by the way, earlier. Guess what, folks? No, that's why you should listen here. We're going to tell you what's going to happen about 2 weeks before it actually does. In any case, Peyton, I thought, has looked pretty good.
Absolutely. He's making plays on both ends of the floor. He had a couple of corner threes in that Lakers game, too, that I thought really should have put Portland over the top. And every single day, I always like to look at his stats. 58% from the field, 60% from three. He's just making shots count, playing with energy. So hoping that continues. Hopefully he can stay healthy and just continue to build upon what he's did so far.
Now, if they can just get Justice Winslow back, then we can start talking about the repaired bench here.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smart Food, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
It's going to be nice to see all of those different guys. You can slot different guys in and play matchups. I think that's really where we're going to see what Billis is made of, because you know he wants to play guys like that. Earlier in the year, we've seen them running, you know, 10-11 man units, and just having so many different players to pick from. Could be huge. You know, I think we all look at the Lakers game and we're kind of skeptical about this team overall. But when they get guys in and they can get a fully healthy lineup, I think we'll learn a lot about this group. So just got to hang in there until then. Hopefully it's not too late.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing, is that ideally the Blazers would have been figuring this out 2 months ago, but injuries and adjustments conspire against that. It would have been optimistic to think they could have. But if you really want to talk about this year being a decisive year, they either should have had these issues in hand, you know, the answers to them, or they would have figured it out really early. That they're figuring it out in January, very late January, is good. It's about what you'd expect, but it doesn't bode real well for their consistency going forward. Even if they even out, might be too late. But consistency, let's talk about consistency. Shaden Sharp this week, he had a 1-for-6 game, a 2-for-3 game, and then an 8-for-12 game. And you know what? I'm kind of good with all of them.
Yeah, it was a weird week for him, too, going from getting chewed out by Billups on the sidelines in that Lakers game Sunday night, coming back and almost threatening a career high on Monday night. So that's the ups and downs of a rookie season. He'll be better for it in the long run. So I think that, like I said before, everything he does this year, I think it's more of a redshirt season, more just learning. Getting reps. He's still so young and you like to see it. And then that Spurs game, it just, man, he looks more athletic than anybody on the floor. Just out jumping anything, and then you love to see the shot selection. He's not just settling for threes, he's getting into the paint, getting into those pull ups. So it's a not a finished product, but what we've seen so far, I think you can be very inspired by. Just gotta build on that, just like everything else.
You can see his fellow NBA players even out on the floor. And you can almost hear the thought process. You know, I'm an NBA player, yep, but not that kind of NBA player. I mean, that's, you know, and I don't mean talent, I don't mean all-star. I mean, just every time he takes flight, people are like, oh, yeah, that.
And he's gonna turn some heads in that all-star weekend. Hopefully the light's not too bright. I think he's going to really put on the show for us.
Yeah, you think he brings Ant? Former champ.
I think he should get the dunk contest champion in there. I think so. I think you definitely got to bring in and show some support, show some love.
You know, he should team up with Greg Brown to do something, some kind of tandem. Yeah. It would be cool if they could. That would be a never before been done thing. If like Brown did a fantastic dunk and got height. And then Sharp did the same dunk right after him, like literally seconds, with more height and volume. And it's just like, oh, okay. This is the normal version. This is the Sharp version.
And you know he can do it too. Hopefully he's listening to this podcast because we've got some ideas for him here. So
yeah,
it'd be cool to see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's all kinds of course, you've got Sharper Image and all kinds of, I mean, we could do, Shane, we could be your publicist. You know, we work pretty cheap. We can, between dad jokes and a little bit of photography, we can make you famous. All right. Speaking of famous or not, Josh Hart continues to be a bit of a lightning rod, point of controversy. Jazz game, he was 0 for 1 in 9 minutes because he had a hamstring issue, and we still don't know at time of this taping what that's going to entail. The Spurs, he was 4 for 5 in 26 minutes, 9 points, which was a really good night for him, but, 9 points. Lakers game, he had 13 on 4 for 8 shooting, had 10 rebounds, 7 assists. That's like vintage best ever Josh Hart, but it came in a losing effort and got lost in the shuffle. One of the big questions people have is, okay, look, Little's playing well. Put Little in the starting lineup. Put Hart off the bench now. How do you feel about that?
I'm kind of on the fence. If I kind of like the idea of it just because we know how special Josh Hart is when he really shoots the ball. And so I'm on board with that. But it's just tough right now to envision what Josh Hart's going to do. No, he's going to get on the glass, but just the hesitance to shoot the shots has been a little bit tough. And he's had one game over his last 10 in which he shot double-digit field goal attempts. I think that's just concerning. So maybe a second unit, bolstering that second unit, I think maybe that could be what fixes it. But right now it's kind of weird the way he's been playing as of late.
Yeah. Okay. So I did an article on this that published today, a couple days ago, as you hear this. And I really, I thought about it. Like when I write, I don't just, I sit and think about it for a couple days, look at the stats, do stuff like that. It's not to say I'm right, but I mean, I just spent more time on this question this week than it probably deserves. My ultimate conclusion was that you could put Hart there and the bench would probably benefit from his experience. But he's not a scorer. He's not an ISO playmaker. He can do those things, but they're part of his Swiss Army knife. He's not a big stick. He's like that corkscrew. And then he's got a few other skills that are fantastic, but the bench already kind of has most of those. He's not going to change the bench. He's just going to be kind of part of the plane. They're not going to create a lot of hills. And I don't think that that's going to help the second unit that much. And I don't think Nasir Little is going to be more free and easy playing with the starters because I think, as soon as Damian Lillard takes the floor, he's the priority. Anfernee Simons along with him compounds that problem. And then you got Jeremy Grant on your other side, and then you can't ignore Yusuf Nurkic. So look, every shot Nasir Little takes in the first unit, he's taking away from someone else. That's not a problem for Josh Hart because he's not taking them anyway. But Nas needs that offense. Nas needs the room to grow and the freedom to not worry about it. I kind of don't like, at this point, moving Little into the starting lineup in favor of Hart. I don't think it does either unit that much good.
Yeah, I'm kind of 50-50. I think they just need a guy that can play with some confidence. We've seen Hart kind of pass up those wide-open shots. And it's sort of disrupted the rhythm of the offense a little bit. But when he's out in transition and in the open floor, it's just a different offense. So I kind of want to wait and see, maybe give it a week or two, just because the Blazers are starting to play more fast paced now. And, maybe this is what Josh Hart needs to get back on track. He didn't score in that Utah game. He obviously left early, but before that, in the Lakers game and his first game, his numbers were pretty good. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt there. And maybe it took a little time, but. I see what you're saying there. I think you can definitely make a case for it. You just need somebody that can come in there and just play their role. And he's better than that. We both said it. He's better than what he's done so far as far as the shot attempts go and the production. But, you just want to see how it goes.
Why do I feel like neither answer is right? I guess that's half my point. Like, okay, you can do it, but it's not going to change that much. And you've just disrupted the flow and you've made Hart look over his shoulder and say, are you demoting me? You've put a new guy in the starting lineup that has to adjust to people and people to him. And I'm wondering what you're really gaining. I don't think, frankly, I think the way the roster is constructed, I don't think either answer works.
You had a pick. Is there a guy that you would try to target, try to fix that? Because I'm like, whoever plays their role, they're going to have to understand that Simons is going to get 16 shots, 17 shots. Grant's going to get, you know, same thing. And Lillard's going to get 20 shots. So it's got to be a guy that can kind of flip the switch and understand what he's got to do. So it's such a weird, I don't know. I'm not sure who can really fill that role and still be a peak performer. But is there a guy that you're looking at?
Look, I do it if they trade Josh Hart. To trade Hart and promote Little, that's different. Nobody's looking over their shoulder. You know, it's the natural thing to do, and I think Nas fits okay. And at that point, I think the promotion in itself would be enough room to grow for him because there's no asterisks by it. But if it's not going to make that much of a difference and you invert them, there's actually an expectation that it's going to do something. And when it doesn't, that's going to be blamed. And it's on both players and on the coach, right? And I think it's just a recipe to reduce their confidence, probably, unless it really, really works. And I don't see it really, really working. Trade Hart, promote Little, and then you have a completely different situation where, Nas, this is your time, this is your chance. Have at it. Yay, welcome to the starting lineup.
I keep thinking about what you said last week about the cap situation where if they trade Hart and they don't get what they get back, then it's lost money. So I don't know. I've been on the fence about all of that. I'm almost kind of on board with them just playing it out and seeing how it goes. But I don't know. I'm 50-50 on that myself. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Let's get there then. The trade deadline is, as we record, exactly 2 weeks away. So it's time to put our chips down. First of all, let's ask a simple question. Do you think the Blazers are going to at least semi-aggressively try to make a move?
I think they'd be foolish not to. You got to go out there and explore all your options, whether you're a buyer or a seller. I think in both scenarios, you got to kind of look at that and evaluate it. We've seen experts talk about it, analysts have talked about it. With Damian Lillard's timeline, you definitely don't want to waste years. You don't want to waste opportunities to get those top guys. You know they're there. But at the same time, nobody knows what direction of this franchise is right now. So it's kind of right down the middle. You can draw a line in the sand with that. So I think, yeah, like I said, as a buyer and a seller, you got to look at both scenarios and see what you can get.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Blazers are going to try to make a move or moves in my estimation. I think there's no doubt about it. The start hasn't been good enough. The cost of keeping the team together as is going to be way too high. They're simply going to end up not able or not willing to spend the money it will take, given the team's production. I mean, let's say this team rallies and finishes five games above 500. That doesn't change anything. You still can't luxury tax yourself into oblivion for a team that, you know, wins 46. Just not going to happen. So they've got to try to make moves. So I believe they should be active right now, both for now and for the future. So here's a question. Is anyone on this roster completely and utterly untouchable in your estimation, or you believe in Portland's? I'm talking about, like, literally there is zero chance that they would hang up the phone if anyone mentioned this name.
If I'm the GM or if, like, realistically?
Both. I mean, what do you think, and what do you think the Blazers think?
If I'm the GM, me personally, I think everybody outside of Lillard's untouchable. I think that just, you know, the loyalty that he's brought to the franchise, it's hard for me to subscribe to the idea of trading him. I think if you're calling, you're bringing up, you know, somebody way younger than him, I think you definitely got to have that conversation. Like, you can't blow it off. But I think, yeah, that'd be my guy. But realistically, I'd say nobody's untouchable. Maybe other than Dame, because like I said, he's done so much for this franchise, but Simons, Hart, all those guys, I think you can see a situation where they'd be in trade talks. But Dame Lillard's probably the one guy I would say is untouchable at this point. He's done too much and it just established too much. He's established too much goodwill for this franchise.
Yeah. And we're talking about, by the way, folks, at the deadline. We're not talking about forever. Might change this summer, but I agree with you, Damian Lillard, and I think probably at this point, Shaedon Sharpe goes in that category, if nothing else, because of his potential to contract ratio. Okay, so could Sharpe be had for a superstar deal? Yeah. I mean, again, if we start talking Pascal Siakam, or obviously north of that, and Sharpe's name is mentioned, I believe the Blazers would consider it. But I'm assuming that that's not even remotely close to possible. And I think for what's out there, Sharpe is also right now fairly untouchable. How about guys that are just extremely unlikely to be traded, like the next level down? Like, okay, you might listen, but that pitch is going to have to be really good in order to convince the Blazers to move them.
Yeah, I think the Blazers have some of those guys too. Not many. I think when you look at the roster, basically everybody outside of Dame is like, it'd be free market. You know what I'm saying? And the Blazers have said before that, you know, they're not trying to tank, so you got to consider that too. I haven't heard anything about Jeremy Grant. I don't think he's the guy that you would want to trade in any situation, really, unless you can get like something a whole tier above. But he'd be the one guy that I would say he fit in that category where it's like you definitely wouldn't want to take too many calls on him unless it was something where you're getting exponentially higher, much better.
Does Sharpe fit that category for you?
I remember in the summer when Kevin Durant, the trade rumors were going on, they were putting Sharpe in those trade scenarios, and this is before we even knew how good he was. So I guess it just depends on how you feel about him now versus what you think his potential is going to be.
Okay.
But if I'm Portland, I think that, and I love Shaedon Sharpe, but if the right offer came around, I think you definitely got to listen to the phone call. You got to see what's up with that, because you know, a championship, we've been won a championship for years and years and years. So if you think you got the roster to do it, then you got to take a shot on that.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm guessing the Blazers would consider Anfernee Simons and Jeremy Grant in this category, that they're not strictly untouchable. Simons, because of the duplication with Sharpe and Lillard, and Grant because of the impending $30 million a year contract. Now, I think they're going to willingly pay that. I think that's why they got him. But if they were to get a better power forward or a comparable power forward in exchange, and there was some incentive to do so, I think they would at least listen, because it's like, wait a minute, we can save a little money, we can fill that position, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think that's at all likely. I just think Grant and Simons kind of belong in that category. Grant probably above Simons. Simons is the closest to touchable among these players. Anyone else that you think the Blazers would have any qualms about trading? I mean, just, do you think everybody else is just pretty much out there at this point?
Yeah, just going down the list, I don't think that there'd be too many other guys that I would say, you know, if you call, I'm not going to talk about this. You know, everybody else is just kind of playing their role. I think what Nasir Little's done has been fantastic, but even at that rate, you know, you still got to take calls on that, and you got to consider the different, you know, deals you can make. So other than Lillard, I think everybody's on the table, and maybe Grant too. So
on the unlikely category for me, I suppose would go Little again because of talent to contract ratio. Gary Payton, simply because they just got him, although I believe they would trade him under the right circumstances, but it's just kind of unlikely that you pick up the guy, he just starts playing for you and you move him. But if he's required as a throw in to another deal, I think that's certainly possible. I'm trying to think of anybody else that like they wouldn't really move, and I'm not coming up with anyone that we haven't mentioned. Likely that they're shopping. Likely. Obviously, we have Josh Hart. To that, I'm very tempted to add at this point Yusuf Nurkic. I think that not only might they listen for deals for Nurk, I think they might go as far as to seek deals for Nurk.
I can see that being the case. And it'd be a lot easier to do this if we felt like the Blazers had an actual identity, you know, because we're not sure if this team's going to be a team that's going to try to be gritty and out-physical you, if they're going to try to go out and be fast-paced. You know, they've had so many different variations over the last couple of weeks that it's hard to say what they're going to tip their cap on. So if they're going fast-paced, I think Nurkic is definitely the guy that probably would have to go. And it's just, it's hard to win games, I think, when you're trying to post up 10, 15 times a game in today's NBA, even if the results are there. So Nurkic is, he's definitely a guy that I would have eyes on. I know he just got paid too, so that's interesting. But if you can get a more athletic guy that can protect the rim a little better for a cheaper cost too, I think you take a shot on that. But I don't know. I'm not sure how it's going to go yet.
Honestly, I believe that some of the Orlando big men are in play. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were in play for Portland. I will tell you, I think a name that we mentioned last time, which is, again, why you should listen to this podcast, Daniel Gafford in Washington, I think could be on their list. And that, I think, would be exciting. So watch those names. There are probably a couple more. What other names do you think would be likely that also interest you? Do you have any in mind?
Not really. I don't have too many guys in mind. I like to kind of just see it play out a little bit. But just to your note on Gafford, I think he fits the Blazers profile, where they kind of go for the high profile athletic guy. So definitely reasonable. I could see you being right on that and being able to brag on that a little bit if it happens. But
me, Brian?
I'm looking at just the different archetypes of guys that we might see them get. I think that I can see that being the case. But as far as a specific guy, I haven't really given that a lot of thought.
Yeah. Well, and here's why too. They got Porzingis coming back, right? And they can probably get another forward. You know, I think it's not impossible that the Blazers engineer either a straight or a three-way deal involving him. And I think Washington has reason to be active at this trade deadline. So it's there. And I would circle that name if I were listening to this podcast, and watch and wait for a minute. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I mean, Mo Bamba is a nice one in Orlando. Like I said before, I would love to get him and Bol Bol, because I think that would be kind of exciting. Again, that would make your bench, that would make your big man bench dynamic in a way that few other things, even Bamba himself doesn't quite do it, but Bamba's better. But I don't think you can trade Nurkic just for Bamba or lose Nurkic in another deal and get Bamba. You need to have three. Right? You kind of need to have a three. You need Eubanks, you need Nurkic, and you need Bamba. Or you need, you just need a third big man in there. Because otherwise, first of all, you're going to lose talent at the center position. I don't think you're going to trade for a better center unless DeAndre Ayton comes available, but I think he'd be snapped up. I don't think the Blazers can sniff close to Miles Turner. He'd be a great get, but what do you do in order to, in order to get him? So the Blazers are either going to have to keep Nurkic and get a backup or pack it in for the year. And if you pack it in for the year, you're not packing it in for the year for Mo Bamba. You're going for a player that's going to help you in years in the future. So I think that's the toughest get, but it's a possibility if they keep Nurk.
I tell you one thing. It's great to be having conversations about big men on the bench. You know, for so many years, we've talked about the guards and being undersized and whatnot. So this is a welcome discussion. I like to see that. And I'm watching a little bit of Orlando, I think that'd be a nice add, just in terms of just being more athletic and being able to out physical teams. Now, we haven't really seen a lot of that in Portland, so that'd be a very welcome sight to see.
So, what do you think of Jared Vanderbilt in Utah? I mean, would that name excite you at all?
From what I've seen him play, I know Utah likes to put him on Lillard, so I think that'd be nice to have another guy you can put on the perimeter guard. And like I said, I don't think you can ever have enough guys you can do that with. You can switch them around and play with length and play with aggression. So I think any move that gets them a little bit better, I think you go for. I wouldn't be opposed to bringing on Jared Vanderbilt if the contracts and stuff match up. So that'd be a pretty good move.
Okay, he's 23. That's a big bonus. He does a lot of things well. I mean, he's an efficient scorer. He is not a three-point shooter, but he's athletic. He can defend, and he's very young. Fits the Blazers' non-Lillard timeline perfectly. Here's the thing. He's a power forward. So, Jeremy Grant kind of already does that. Vanderbilt, you bring him on. I mean, he's a starter in Utah. He's been a starter for 2 years now straight, and really 2.5. Is he going to come off the bench for you? Maybe not comfortably. Can he play center? Maybe not comfortably. So that would be an example of a trade that the Blazers might do, which kind of stocks things for the future and understands that this year they're not going to win a title. So play out the string, do as well as you can. If you fall into the lottery, oops, I don't think they'll tank. But, you know, falling into the lottery wouldn't be the worst thing. Making the playoffs would be fine, but you know you're not going to win there no matter what you do. So now you make your move to get talent where you can at the trade deadline and figure you're actually going to fix up the roster during the summer.
All right, got to consider every scenario. And looking at Vanderbilt's, I guess, play-by-play, it looks like he's played about a quarter of his minutes this year, about 1,000 minutes. At center. So he's definitely got some experience there. It seems like a guy that you can mix around. So I think, you can never have too many of those guys.
Okay, granted. I mean, just another 6'8 guy playing out of position. The only thing they need less is another 6'5 guy playing out of position. I don't know. It makes me itchy. But you know what? I'd take him for the right deal, exactly the way we said. And then you've got some depth, at least at power forward, and maybe swing power forward and center. And now you look to fill up the center position during the summer. Oh, man. So what do you think are the percentage odds of the Blazers actually making a deal that's more than just like their 13th man or a second round pick or something like that? A deal of that affects the rotation in some way. What would you say?
I'm going to go off the top of my head, I'll say maybe 25%. I think there are just so many different factors that you have to kind of put into play when it comes to that. And I think Damian Lillard's going to have a big role in that. You know, he helped orchestrate the big deal to get Jeremy Grant this past summer based on the relationship they had in Team USA. So if he knows a guy and he's been able to spend time with him and he can make a move like that, help to make a move like that, I think then you see it, but it's tough to say. What do you think?
Willingness, 99%. Ability to actually do it, I'm going to go 33. I'll go a little higher than you. But my problem is matching contracts, not taking on salary, like we've talked about before, which I think they definitely do not want to do at this point. And also, like, just not, I think they're going to have players that they don't want to give up right now. I just see Simons and Sharp being among them, and I think those are two of the big movers, possibly. You know, players didn't get deals done. I don't think the Blazers are done experimenting with them. I don't know if they know which is which, or whether they can keep both, or whether they are the backcourt of the future and then Lillard fades or gets moved or something. I too many questions of players that they're going to want answered before they deal them. So I don't see them dealing in midseason.
That's a good point. And I keep thinking about that Anthony Simons thing where they were saying he was untouchable. Do you believe that's true? Or is that just kind of talk just to kind of build confidence and keep the water afloat?
Yeah. I mean, he's in that second category. They're not likely to touch him, but they would for the right deal. I mean, that's why I said on BE, you know, when I wrote about this, if the Bucks called and said, you can have Giannis for Anthony Simons, he's touchable, right? So it's all a matter of degree. But I don't think they're going to get the degree of trade for him that's going to make him movable right now. I've already said that I would trade him. I mean, Pascal Siakam, I know that's too high. But, you know, if Simons and Nurkic or Simons, Hart, I would make that deal. You know, without much problem for a player of that caliber. Here's a good question. OG Anunoby, he is like the Rorschach test of NBA analysts, because some people are going like, this guy is the second coming of everything your team needs. Get him, get him, get him. And other people are going, oh boy. First of all, it is not guaranteed that he's going to help you. And second of all, what Toronto wants is going to impoverish you. Where do you fall on the OG Anunoby debate?
I'm a big OG Anunoby fan. I think he checks a lot of boxes off for us. And the way you said it a couple weeks ago, with just the lineups that you can run with him in there, it's fun to see. I'm not sure about the contract situation and whatnot, but Toronto's got a lot of different guys you can unload. And Portland and Toronto, you've seen they've made trades in the past, so obviously there's a little bit of a connection there. So that might be the best choice, you know, who to talk to. But I basically support everybody. I don't think that there's a trade there with OG that I would be opposed to, especially if you can keep the guys like Grant and Lillard, you know, those guys in there. So
So we've said Orlando, Washington, Toronto, strong possibilities. That's if the Blazers are buyers. Do you think there's any chance the Blazers become sellers here? Do they just, for instance, dump Nurkic or dump Hart for some kind of return that brings them, I don't know, future draft picks or something like that?
I think if the next 2 weeks, you know, exactly 2 weeks away, I think if the next 2 weeks go poorly, I think you'll definitely see a situation where they kind of tread back on what they said before about not taking down the season. So we've said it before, just how important the schedule is for them, but I think it's definitely going to be big for this next 2 weeks, because if they go into that and they're 7-8 games under 500, I can see them being sellers. I can see them, you know, really deciding to take a long-term outlook and making the moves necessary to get to the next point in the future. So it's if you're a fan of the Blazers selling the team, I think you want to see some losses here, but that's going to be huge.
Is Yusuf Nurkic worth a first-round pick in trade? Do you think he can draw a first-round pick?
It's got to be for a team that kind of plays old school. You know, the way he plays, I think is not conducive to a lot of success that you see today. So, it's going to be tough. I think if you get the right team and the right situation, maybe you get there. But if it were the other way around and somebody were offering us a number one pick and they were giving us Nurkic back, I would probably decline that personally. But I don't know. Everything's so skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, I would take it at this point, I think. And obviously, they'd have to have a contract coming back, because I don't think there's a team with enough cap space to just absorb him. But here's why. I think that then frees up future trades. I don't mean at the deadline, but in summer, I mean, acquiring an extra first-round pick can solve a lot of problems. I don't believe, in my heart of hearts, that the Blazers go with Nurkic for another year. If this year doesn't work, I think that they're done. I think they're going to move him, and if they could get a pick for him, and I don't think they'd want an expiring contract, probably, because it's the same thing as Josh Hart. That money just goes away. But if they can get someone on a reasonable contract that lasts this year and next year, so they have some trade options over the summer with them, I really think they might consider it at this point. And I think Hart, look, let me say this from the beginning, and you know this, I have been a Josh Hart advocate. You and I like what he does almost more than anybody in this market, and we have said so. But I'm not sure the percentage in keeping him through the summer. I think there's just too much risk of him leaving. Would you keep him?
I kind of want to see a playoff with Josh Hart, yeah. Like I said, I'm basing everything on what I've seen recently from this group. So if the way they're going to play is it fits the way he plays, you know, where you're getting coast to coast and playing harder than they did before, I think you'll see his fit start to play out a little bit better. But just without an identity, it's hard to say. And I think that even in Hart's situation, maybe he's thinking to himself, like, his talents would be better benefited somewhere else. I'm 50-50 on it, but if it were up to me, I would say, yeah, let's keep Hart. Let's run it through. He's a guy that fits the culture, fits what they like to do, and he brings energy every night. So I think that if it were up to me, I think you keep him.
My heart says I want him. My heart says I want him in Trailblazer for a long time. My brain says that doesn't make sense. It's that relationship dilemma, right? Where do you think, look, if you could put Josh Hart on one team or two, besides the Blazers, where do you think he would be ideal?
Ooh, that's hard. Let me think. It's got to be a team that has a fast pace. You know what I'm saying? That's going to go out there and get sideline to sideline for sure. I don't think he can play in like Phoenix. They've historically been a really slow-paced team. I wouldn't want to see him there. I think you want to see him somewhere maybe in Golden State's the team that comes to mind immediately. So I think he'd be fantastic for them, getting the open floor and getting open shooters in the corners and kicking out to those guys. So shame, but maybe Memphis. Memphis would be a great fit for him, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'd
say Memphis. Memphis is probably my pick, yeah.
I go East Coast. I'd say Miami would be a strong one. I think he could even, I mean, he would be sweet in Boston. They don't need him, but like, you know, spelling those forwards and playing a little off guard as well, I think that would be cool for him. I think Josh Hart is going to prosper wherever Josh Hart goes. I have no concerns for his future as an NBA player. I just, no. I wish this experiment was working better so we could go Josh Hart forever and, you know, pay him. And we're not going to lose that salary slot because everybody's succeeding and everybody's happy. And right now, I think Hart would say, you know what, I want to stay here forever. But this summer, Josh Hart might also say, I want to stay here forever and I'd like closer to $20 million a year or 19 or 18 to do it. And it's like, all right, well, I'll preserve that salary slot because I don't want to lose it. But you know what? That's luxury tax dollars. And now I'm at 28 with Jeremy Grant, and I'm at 18 with Josh Hart, and I'm at $50 billion for Damian Lillard, and I'm at 25 with Anthony Simons, and I still couldn't get rid of Yusuf Nurkic. And now I've got essentially a 500 team that's costing me a gazillion dollars, taking me out of, you know, the under the tax realm into tax paying, into losing windfalls. I just don't see ownership doing this. I see Joe Cronin going, you know, this could be pretty cool. And they're going, also, it could not.
It'd be a little bit easier too if he were out there, like if he were the reason why the Blazers lose. I just happened to look this up, looking at the Blazers on off numbers, basically like how the team does when the player's on the floor and off the floor. He's like literally the second highest behind Damian Lillard at plus 84 per 100 possessions. So he's definitely making a positive impact when he's out there, even if he's not scoring the ball. And before he got here, and it kind of bothered me that he had not ever made the postseason, because the way he plays is just, it's built for the postseason. You know what I'm saying? It's just the energy and tenacity that he plays with. He deserves that, you know, whether it's with Portland or whether it's with a different team. And he plays the right way. He fits the profile of a guy like a Kersey or I'm trying to think of some old role players that were like really, really appreciated in Portland. Just guys like that you can see it. So I'm hoping it's a happy ending for him in Portland, but if not, wherever he goes, they're going to appreciate and maybe be able to get better use out of his services than Portland does. So that'd be something to watch for.
All righty. Well, as we wind down here, and we probably should because I haven't checked the time, but I bet we're running long here. Let's look at the schedule that is coming up ahead for Portland. They have a small break here, but we know that they're going to play on Saturday. So they have the Toronto Raptors on Saturday, the Atlanta Hawks on Monday, at the Memphis Grizzlies on Wednesday. So again, three games between now and the time we talk again next. Toronto at home, Atlanta at home, Memphis on the road. What do you see as the record?
I guess my better judgment, I'm going to say 3-0. I'm going to say 3-0. Toronto and Atlanta are two teams that are in a little bit of a disarray with trade rumors surfacing and whatnot. And then Memphis has been good, but they've been a little bit vulnerable with the injuries they've had. So they're beatable. And I think that I love the way that they played Memphis in that first game. Probably should have won that game. They made a great comeback to the lead. So I think with the Blazers kind of knowing that there's so much at stake in terms of the roster construction and the postseason and whatnot, I think we get a good week from them. And being able to have a little bit of rest there too is going to be huge. 3 days off before the Toronto game. So I'll go 3-0 and I'll live with a 2-1. So I think that's usually how it works out. You overpredict and it's slightly under. So 3-0, 2-1, I'm cool with that. I'll go with that.
Yeah. I mean, 2-1 would be a successful, I mean, all these teams are decent. So 2-1 would be good. You hope they don't go 1-2. Last question. The Lakers call up and say, we will offer you Patrick Beverley. And we will offer you Patrick Beverley in our 2027 first round pick for Yusuf Nurkic.
This I will probably pass on.
Pat, by the way, makes $13 million, which is less than Nurk, I believe, and you can cut him. So you're saving a couple million and getting a first round pick.
I think it's definitely, you can see the case for it. But 2027 is such a long time away. And Portland, I think they're already set in terms of guard, like Gary Payton. What can Patrick Beverley do that Gary Payton isn't doing already? So I think it'd be a little bit redundant. And we've seen how it looks, you know, offense where you got guys that do the same thing and kind of get themselves out of the rotation. So I would maybe shoot a little bit higher. I think that's definitely something to think about. But if it were to me, I'd try to get a little bit more for Nurkic.
But yeah. I just made enemies out of all of our listeners, by the way, too. I mean, that would be funny as heck. I would like to see Damian Lillard like click on Twitter the day after and see that. Of course, they'd inform him before, but it's like, you did what? You did what with who? But I think almost certainly they'd waive Beverly, save the money, or Beverly's contract expires. So, hey, I mean, who knows? But anyway, you all can consider that gross trade until next week. Marlo and I will be back, and maybe, just maybe, the Blazers will have a deal done. If not, we will be 7 days away and be talking hot and heavy trade possibilities. Until then, I'm Dave Deckard for Marlo Ferguson. We will see you soon.